Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, as always, on the ones and twos with the headphones. Special guest today, restaurateur, chef, all-around great guy, Jean Robert de Cavol.
Great living Cincinnatian.
Great living Cincinnati.
Named by the Chamber earlier this year.
Had a street renamed after him last year. So looking forward to having Jean Robert on today. See what he's up to. Hadn't caught up with, well, it'll be his first appearance on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. So
I feel like I see him all over, but he has not been a guest before.
No, so looking forward to having him. But first, before we jump over to our guest, Cher, you're big news, big story coming up here in the next month. The PG Sittenfeld trial is scheduled to start June 20th.
It is. And, you know, like you hear a trial date and like if you've ever covered courts like I have, you hear a trial date, you're like, that's not going to happen. This is it. This is the trial date, June 20th. Everyone has said this is going forward. Witnesses are starting to be called. We don't have the actual witness list yet. We're just starting to hear where that's going. But this trial is happening on June 20th. And we saw, you know, a pretty big court filing last night on Tuesday night from PG Sittenfeld's attorneys, really kind of laying out their case. These are called trial briefs. They're due by May 28th. The state's going to put out one too. And it's really to give an explainer to the judge and where you feel like your case is going. This is no surprise. PG Sittenfeld's, you know, his defense is this is American democracy. He did not do anything wrong. I mean, this is a 30-page trial brief. There's a lot of examples of why he thinks, you know, the conversations were what they were related to campaign donations and development projects, and that they're not. They were not, you know, bribes, federal corruption at all. And so we saw a lot of things there. It gives us new details in the case, though, which is my favorite thing about the briefs. Every time that one is filed, it's like dribs and drabs of new information. This court filing alleges that Chittenden and Duque, the state's, you know, star witness, there's really no other way to put it, was, you know, in some trouble himself, and that's why he cooperated with federal authorities. That's the first time we heard that. We had in the past heard that Mr. Ndugwe was just very, you know, upset with how city politics were going and on his own came to federal authorities to, you know, really say that they didn't feel like things were going right in the city. So I feel like we'll probably see some more stuff related to that in these next set of briefs that come out from the state. Of course, we do need to remember everything that's said in a court document is a public record. But there's two sides to every story.
That's right.
And so these back and forth briefs have been interesting because, you know, one side says this and then the next side says, here's some more context. And then that side says this and then another side says, there's some more context. And so we won't really know everything until trial, but there's definitely some new information out there today.
And Cher, you've covered courts for us here at the Inquirer for several years, and you've covered federal cases, obviously local cases, state cases. As we sit here and record today on May 18th, we're looking just, you know, really a little over a month before this trial is to begin. What should we expect between now and then? And is there going to be a lot of news like this? Are there going to be a lot of back and forth between the two sides filings? Or is it, do you think it'll be pretty?
No, I expect this case will really start to heat up. I expect to see a lot of filings and, you know, the judge has to make a lot of rulings of filings that are just sitting there that we've written about before. Like, how much can we know about this and that? Mm-hmm. Who can testify and why? And so, well, that really, you know, gives you a window into what's happening with once the judge really starts coming down with what can be entered into the courtroom and happens.
And I think there's obviously going to be huge interest in this case and this trial, and you'll be our lead reporter, and we'll have, you know, be all over this. While we're talking about it, have you talked to PG Sittenfeld? What is he up to these days? He's not said anything publicly for several months now.
I have not spoken to him.
What's going on with him?
I have not spoken to him since really like right after, mm-hmm. right after these allegations came out. But I do feel like that's pretty much par for the course. And, you know, if you have a good attorney, he is going to say, don't talk. Mm-hmm. And a good defendant listens because you just never know. And so he really, I think, I mean, I have heard, of course, he does still talk to people at City Hall that he, you know, he's a stay-at-home dad to his son who's 2 years old. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't really want to talk about, you know, his family, but the court filing, you know, goes into it. It goes into, oh, really? You know, that he's a dad and all of the good things he's done for the city. In 30 pages, there's a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And so really, there's like a whole chunk of it goes into, you know, what the city meant to him and the good works he's done. It kind of lays out that kind of thing. And it does talk about him being a husband and a father. And so that is, I've heard that he is a husband and a father these days. And
yeah.
I think he does still talk to people down at City Hall. I mean, I think it would be hard for him probably not to, you know, really be paying attention to what's happening. But I don't have a good window into that.
Yeah, I know. And just, you know, the only thing I've seen is he occasionally posts on Facebook a picture, you know, him and his son, wife, you know, out doing family fun things. So, just again, you know, while we're on the topic, one other thing, and this is unique in that it is federal court. And so there's, even though there's going to be such attention and, you know, media attention on it during that trial, there's still, you're not going to be able to see a live action because there aren't any electronics allowed in the court, right? Or
electronics
allowed to be used.
You know, different states do things different ways. Ohio state courts do allow cameras in courtrooms, but federal courts all over the country, they do not allow recording, electronics. And it's like, this is where my sloppy note taking comes into handy. It's actually very good note taking. It's my own personal shorthand. I don't use it all the time. I like to take notes on my computer these days, or like you just get your phone out and record something real quick and transcribe it. But this is going to be strictly note taking.
And note, so no live tweeting, correct?
No. The Inquirer, we're working on something to make sure that we get you people news all day long. It's going to involve multiple people. How exactly we're doing that, I don't know. But I can promise you, you know, myself and Kevin Grasha will be covering this trial every day. You know, he's our courts reporter, criminal justice, with an eye on the whole thing of like how it's playing out and the charges and what's being proven and not proven and like the legal ease of this. And I'm really going to be watching for all of the things that come out about the city. You know, we have a court filing that says there's seven, you know, developers who have come forward and talked to federal authorities. They're not named. Of course, they're not named, who, according to the court filing, said they felt pressure. Now, that's definitely different than being asked something or whatever. You know, the words matter in those. But, like, are we going to see those people? We're going to hear about developments. We're definitely going to hear about 435 Elm because that's at the heart of this case. And that is, like, the old Convention Place Mall. It's across the street from the Convention Center. It's still a rotting, crumbling. It's right across the street from the Inquirer. I walk by it all the time.
It's an ugly building.
And so we'll hear a lot about that deal, who's involved in that. And like, I think there's just going to be a lot of city things coming out, during this case.
And one other thing, before we jump over to our guest, like with your stories, will there be photos and videos, or videos aren't allowed to be even taken? And again,
nothing in the courtroom. I feel like there'll probably be some things coming in and out of court. Possibly, but even then, I mean, I think we all know what P.G. Sittenfeld looks like.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was just curious, like, because, you know, you see a lot of times in federal court, there's sketches, but then, so there can't be a still photo taken, and then it's posted after the proceeding.
Whether there'll be sketch artists from us or anyone else, that's definitely not clear yet.
Gotcha.
But that is something that does happen. You see in federal court cases, you know, the celebrity trials kind of thing, that there are sketch artists. And so he'll have to be there for sure.
Okay.
What that looks like.
And I'm just trying to give folks a look. What is this? What's the daily going to look like as this trial unfolds a month from now? And, You know, and it's going to be different than what, you know, I think generally what you're used to when it comes to high profile cases around here is that we're used to, you know, cases in Hamilton County, the high profile courts and in the state courts.
You know, and in today's world, you really don't even cover something every day. Almost, right. Almost never.
Right.
You know, just you kind of cover the highlights. This is going to be an everyday thing.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll look forward to just as that story unfolds here over the next month and leading into the trial, the coverage on Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Inquirer. And yeah, let's take a break from that and jump over and bring on John Robert. As we said, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm pleased to welcome John Robert. And John Robert, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Laurie.
And
does everyone just call you chef, though?
I guess, yes, some way. But, you know, I don't always turn my head. It's someone called chef, so... I think I'm more well-known as Jean Robert, my first name. I don't think very few people know my last name, but it's what it is. You know, I think I'm Jean Robert, yeah. And I think when you say Jean Robert, then automatically people think of the chef. So yes, chef, many people do call me chef.
One of my very first things I ever did in Cincinnati right after I moved here was go to Pagal's. And I will never forget... you were cooking in the kitchen and you were doing like a chef's table in the kitchen. Yes. And mm-hmm. Polly Campbell was there that night.
Really?
I'm guessing she was writing a story, but like I was just there with like some new friends who were kind of introducing me around to Cincinnati. I didn't even know Polly yet, but I just kind of watched everything that was happening and it was an amazing dinner. So that was actually my introduction to Cincinnati.
Oh, well, that's wonderful to know. I'm very happy to know, actually, because I have to be honest with you. Looking back at my years, and I look at, you know, at that restaurant, I feel like it was definitely a restaurant when I put my heart and soul. And I tried to do, you know, I've been coming here after being at the Maisonette, and the Maisonette is definitely the grand dame of the restaurant for many years. And it was so well-known, not only locally, but internationally. But for me to separate myself and opening Pigalle was definitely something I also want to. It was a challenge against myself, like saying, I'm going to stay in Cincinnati and going to try to do something anybody will do almost anywhere and be proud of being doing it in Cincinnati. And I think Pigalle was definitely my... And it's kind of like the end kind of like got a little sad for me because I don't think it should have ever happened. But I did put my heart and soul, and I felt like it was, you know, it was like, and I know I feel, so I'm very thankful actually you went to visit that, because today when I talk to the younger generation of people who don't know Pigalle, like it's hard to explain what Pigalle was all about, you know, it was. You know, and it was not tried to reach the. We never got the 5-star. We got the 4-star two years later, and you know, our one list was not as elaborate and as, you know, but we could have got 5-star a few later on if we were still, you know, doing what we like to do.
So you.
And, but I put the right team together. I mean, it was like I said, this restaurant. I'm proud to say this restaurant could have been anywhere in Europe, lost town in New York, anywhere in America, and be as respected by the local.
So you do. Yeah. You're born in France. You have restaurants in New York City. You're really becoming this amazing chef. You come here to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Before you opened Pagal's, were, you know, the real big food cities back then trying to steal you back and say, no, mm-hmm. come here, do a restaurant here?
Yeah, so it was, so, yeah, I mean, I was in New York City, I had happened to be a young chef at a very well-known hotel in New York City. I mean, I'm going to brag, but we were the number one hotel in New York City. We were one of the first boutique hotel in New York City. It's called the Plaza Athénée, it's a French hotel, it's still there. And I was a young chef, I was maybe too young to understand, you know, what, and food was different by then. You know, chef was in the kitchen and chef was doing their things in the kitchen. The chef will start getting public in the front, but not, you know, chef. It was different, you know, it was a little bit different. I know it sounds like I'm sound like a little older, but it was true. It was very different. And anyway, I left the Plaza Athénée and opened something with a group, a very well-known group in New York, and things didn't really go the way I wanted. And so I was, and then Maisonette reached me to a well-known chef, Daniel Boulou, who's a dear friend of mine since I knew him since 1986. Never worked for Daniel, actually. Daniel was the first chef of the Plaza Athénée, so I actually took his job later on. And so Daniel, you know, anyway, I came to Maisonette, and it was the reason I came to Cincinnati. I have to say, the reason I took the job, it was not an easy decision coming from New York, because I've never really, the only place in America I know it was definitely the tourist area, you know, visit LA, visit San Francisco, Chicago, etc., New Orleans, but never really went to the, you know, a smaller town like Cincinnati was, you know. And but the Maisonette was so, and then going back to work was a family-owned restaurant, really remind me a little bit of my past of Europe, working with people who, you know, you can reach, you can go and talk to them if you have issues, or you can share with you your feeling. You can share with them what you try to accomplish. And it was, I felt like it was really part of a team. Plus, I think it was a large corporation of hotel. So it was a little bit different. The GM was a GM, the same way that I was a chef de cuisine. And but having the owner on the side, I think it's a very different, it's something I was more used to and I felt more comfortable with. And having the commissar and knowing the reputation of the Maisonette, I felt, and I became, it's interesting, I think I became, the day that I came, of course, I was young. The chef was retiring at 63, and I was 32 years old. So, of course, the whole Cincinnati was like, what is that young guy is going to do here, you know? He's going to take a restaurant and be like, what is he going to do? And I've many funny stories that I can share, but it's worth like the days. But the people think I did change a recipe when I didn't even change it, because it was such a big secret recipe from the restaurant that I didn't want to touch it. But people make comments about the fact like it may have changed, and it was kind of funny. It was just the way people, you know, the way people were thinking. And so, and I came and I got accepted by the city extremely well. I mean, I had a chance to go to Philly Market. A week after I came to Cincinnati, I visited the city. I enjoyed antiquing and discovery. So every Sunday on my day off, I had a car and I drove everywhere to know the town and to know the area. And I felt I really enjoy. And very Cincinnati is very similar to where I grew up in France. I grew up in Lille, north of France, which is between Paris and Bruxelles. And it's very, very similar. We have the Four Seasons, you know, amazing art scene, amazing history. But, you know, it's north of France. It's not south of France. You know, it's very similar to Cincinnati. The attitude of people are very similar. Hardworking people who care about their town. And, you know, you grew up here. It's not really the place where you're going to move because you're retiring, you know. It's not that type of a place. Or if you work for a large corporation and then they send you to north of France, it's like sending you to Cincinnati. You're like, okay, I'm going to be there for 18 months, but I cannot wait to get back to wherever I'm from. And then you may fall in love with the city because of the people and because of what the city offers.
So the 32-year-old you who came to be the head chef at the Maisonette, would that guy have said you're going to be still living in Cincinnati and thriving and become this, you know, incredibly popular person and all these restaurants you've opened up? You look back on that, would you have thought you would still be here today?
No, completely. No plan. No, I put myself kind of a, you know, 2 to 3 years commitment. And I'm same thing. I feel like when you take over a chef job like that, when you take over a position like that, it's not, you have to put yourself in a situation where, I mean, of course, if I didn't like the way the things so you know went, I would have to leave. You know, if they didn't like what I was doing. But I think when you take a job like that, it's not a job you just take and you just put your heart and soul for a few years, because it's a respect to tradition, respect to what this restaurant is all about. The restaurant was there way before I was born. And so it's a respect a little bit. It's a respect that you have to give. So my idea was be there for at least 2 to 3 years and maybe even go back on the East Coast or maybe even go back to Europe, you know, and that was always my idea. And of course, my idea was not to stay in Cincinnati, but, you know, like Cincinnati. But then I, you know, after being there for years after years, I felt extremely comfortable. I really enjoyed doing my, you know, I think I do a job where you have to really enjoy. You have to enjoy doing what you do. And because it's dedication, it's part of being part of the city, being part of something. You bring some joy to people and so I stay, and the year went by quite fast. I think it's what the problem in your 30s. You know, in your 30s, you remember your 20s of learning and jumping everywhere, and then in your 30s, you, I'm not saying you settle down, but you kind of, you know, a little bit more, you know, taking more week by week, month by month, and then you turn around and it's year by year, you know. And
we know.
So it's exactly what happened to me, and of course, and that's one of the reasons I left the Maisonette, because I didn't leave the Maisonette because I, you know, I could have stayed there for many years to come, but I left because I want to do something on my own, because I, that's where I realized if I want to do something, if I want, no, I'm in Cincinnati for too long, why I'm going to, I mean too long, not too long in a negative way, but I did invest myself in Cincinnati. People respect what I do. People enjoy what I do. I really felt like, you know, it was, I could make Cincinnati the city where I'm going to live. And so it's a little bit of an investment. And I think if you look at chefs who are not from Cincinnati, or anybody, you know, Louis Langred, the maestro of the symphony, Victoria Morgan from the ballet. I mean, you look at, I mean, even maybe the head of Porter, who's not from here. It's an investment. You come here and it's an investment. It's an investment to the corporation you work for the company you work for, and it's an investment to the city. And in the end, you want to be part of it. You want to be part of that. And so that's where I decide to leave. And I left in a very, very good term. And the owners really, they understand. They understand they could not give me the next step. And so that's where I decided to open Pigar. No, you know, try to, I don't, you know, not give them competition, but allow another restaurant of more modern style of cooking what was going on everywhere, be in Cincinnati.
And you have had, but you didn't just stay with that restaurant. And I feel like even at the time that it closed, you could have. Do you feel like with every iteration that you're bringing forward, you are challenging yourself? Because you've really, you know, taken steps into places like Table and Bar Le Bouf, like that you surprise people, Frenchies, and people are like,
are you? I know, it's I'm not much of a competitor, but I do challenge myself a lot, I have to say. You know, I'm not someone who tries to compete to be on, I'm not someone who push people try to be on in the first place. I'm not that type of a person. I'm more someone who's, you know, taking the ride, and then suddenly I'm taking the ride and I realize I'm on top of it, and so know what's next, you know, and so looking for something a little higher. And I think when Pigar was open and I put the concept together with my wife at the time, and we were like, really, you know, it was my dream restaurant when it came, and I want people to come to visit me from elsewhere and be proud of what I was doing. I mean, you may know of that association, Rolle Chateau, and it's a large association of the top hotel and restaurant in the world. And my goal was to be part of it. And it's an expensive club to be part of, but it's like any other expensive club. If you're not part of it, they will not allow you to be part of it. And after 2 years, I became a Relais Gourmand since we didn't have any hotel room. And it was my biggest, probably my biggest joy as a restaurant, as a chef, as an entrepreneur, and also being in Cincinnati, because I know you could stay in one of the top hotels in the world and look at that little book and look at Cincinnati, Ohio, and see the name of a restaurant where doing the same quality, same standards, same dedication to any of these 2-star, 3-star Michelin and fine hotel around the world. And that's where it was my goal, and my goal was not right. Because I want to be the, and then suddenly, I got called into falling in love very easily. I fall in love with that city. I did fall in love with that city quite fast. And I want to bring different things to that city. I mean, when I opened Genro, and I don't know if you visit Genro, but the same thing. I mean, it was a pizza place, and it was across the street. It's across the street from the West End. And I went to visit there with a friend of mine who was in the real estate. And as soon as we moved, I went to the place. I'm like, oh, I want to open a little French busy bistro so I can show all of my poster and things I buy everywhere instead of having that in my basement. And it became one of the hardest restaurants in the city because the same thing, the staff. And today, I still have staff who still work with me, work there. Staff who work at Pegado still work with me. And every time I see, I just had a visit yesterday from a young, she's not that young anymore. But I hired her when she was 18 as a busser at Pegado. And then she worked with me and she was just talking about, and now she's in New York. She's very successful in New York. And she was looking back and she just wants to, spend time with me and talk about it. And that's why, when I opened Faux Paris, it's another restaurant where, I was friends with the Solon family and I want to open something. It was kind of like what was happening in the larger city where it was a fusion, French and Vietnamese. And it was every restaurant, every things I try to do the best I could to not only for the Cincinnati market, but only for everybody else to really enjoy and talk about it. Looking back, it's a lot actually. But same thing with Over the Rhine. When I went over the Rhine for the first time, I saw it with the people I visited that place from 12th Street, and it was nothing. It was nothing. Kroger building was not built, was no parking lot, was nothing. It was just one little store, and I try to remember the name.
You're talking about Lava-matic.
It was a store. What was the name of that store? It was a little gift store. And they moved from the center downtown to Over the Rhine and Metro Nation. I don't know if you remember that. and I decided talking to my partners. And I would have done it with my partner or not my partners. I mean, in the end, I wish things would have gone differently with them. But because it was something I want to open Lava-matic. And when I see what's today, that corner is, and when I see what, Vine Street is. I'm proud and I'm a little bit sad about it because
you were there a little too early, right? I mean, Lava-matic is great.
I don't even know if it was too early, but it was there. Someone had to start. I mean, someone had to start somewhere. Someone had to be part of that, of what the vision could be, and then when I met with Twisted DC don't exist at the time. It was kind of like the beginning of Twisted DC, but it was a group of people who saw it coming and they invited me to have a tour. And I said, I want to open something there. I'm going to do something because I really believe that. I believe that things can change. And like I say, it sounds a little bit pretentious, but it's true. I do not really lie. I don't have to lie in so many ways. I don't have to pretend. I was there and I saw it. And to see what today is, what it is, it's unbelievable. Even with Cincinnati. I never understood. And of course, it's a little bit of a European snob. You have one of the most expensive art, who is the ballet, the symphony, the opera. And you have that in one of the most beautiful, the music hall, one of the most beautiful older music hall in America. And it was such a bad area to go. And I could never understand how that city allowed that area to be so not welcoming. And I'm like, it would be anywhere in France from, you know, the city I grew up, or, you know, or even if you go to the Met in New York, of course, to be honest, compared to New York to Cincinnati. But, you know, this area would have never be run down the way it was run down. And I could never understand that. I said, here you're going to pay the high ticket price for the most expensive things in the, you know, the art things in the world, and then you are, the park is, you will not cross the park because of, you know, the because of the crime, and there was no restaurant around, there was no bar around, it was nothing. It was like really nothing. And I think, you know, and I used to get so, and today when I see what, you know, what that park is all about, having all of the restaurant and all of the show, and it's unbelievable, because I always felt like that city deserved that, you know. And I think it's unbelievable. I think that's what Cincinnati, this past almost two decades now, have changed. And I think that's where Cincinnati became such a respected in so many ways, because I think we Cincinnati was really able to recreate the local neighborhood of downtown. And I think that's what makes Cincinnati amazing today. I think, you know, this local neighborhood of downtown who were there when Cincinnati was built, but were completely not taken care of for many years because of suburb, way people want to live in a suburb, the way, you know, the highway. And I mean, we all know the story of America. That's where fast food, that's where people came away from food, went away from food for a few decades because they were spending more time in their cars going back home after walking in the downtown of their town. And suddenly they couldn't enjoy good food. They couldn't enjoy market. They couldn't enjoy anything like that. And suddenly the fact Cincinnati realizing part of it, Cincinnati got very lucky because nothing was destroyed. The over the Rhine, the park, you look at the, you know, Pennington, Philly Market area, all of this area were never really destroyed. And so because they were never destroyed, they were ready to come back. And today is what we see today. It's a thing, it's unbelievable, you know.
No, I agree. I mean, and you can go down to any of those things and you have so many choices of, you can have a fine dining experience. You can have a casual experience. I mean, one of our favorite things to do is when we go to the symphony is we go to French Crust, and because you can take the streetcar. You can park, you could take the streetcar to Music Hall. Our son loves that. And have that, you know, night like that. Or you can go to Boca.
But I think that's where I think, you know, yeah. But I think what that created a little bit is more like, I call that mushroom area. You know, that's something Cincinnati didn't have when I came. When I came, you know, you went to a res game, and if you could afford to be at the Maisonette, you were at the Maisonette for a res game. Or you went to La Normandie for a res game. You know, and but then you were also maybe going to your suburb restaurant in Hyde Park. Today, if you go to the res game, the chance of you to be more in the res around the field area is more likely to be. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, like you talk about over the Rhine now. When you go to the Symphony or you go now to the stadium, FCC, you know, you will want to park your car and maybe take, you know, take the connector and then be able to be part of that little area and understanding what they have or what's new, and going to a wine bar, going to a bar, going to a restaurant, and or looking at another restaurant that you've never been. But you see, next time we make a reservation there because it's going to be a different experience than the one we had today. And I mean, Pendleton, I remember Pendleton when, I mean, I've never been, but it was Friday night, but I know many people who went to the last, you know, I don't know if they still do that, the last Friday in Pendleton, but you went to eat at the Maisonette, you went to eat at La Normandie, and then you were going to the Archer. Today, if you go to Pendleton, you will stay there and you will have this restaurant you were at this restaurant and this bar and the feel of walking around the neighborhood and feel safe and feel like you could be on vacation somewhere, you know?
You are credited with making fine dining more accessible with Table, yep. which was at 7th yes. and Race or 7th and Vine.
7th and Vine, yeah.
7th and Vine, yes. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, Table, I think Table might be my favorite. Can you pick a favorite from your babies?
I think I can explain what Table was. You know, Table was a restaurant where I had to put my heart and soul to be able to stay in Cincinnati with all of the support from the Cincinnatian. And it was at the time where, you know, my partnership didn't go the right way. And so, you know, the guy closed. I had to leave the group because of silly misunderstanding. And so Table was definitely I almost want to say a love affair with the Cincinnatian, you know, and I felt like, you know, I was very happy because Cincinnati State offered me a job. And I told the corporation, I would love to help you. I would love to teach a little bit. I would love to do a little bit of education to people, but it's not what I want to do. It's not what I'm made for. I will probably reopen a restaurant or leave town. And so Table was one of these restaurants where I was able to find this place. It was not very attractive in the beginning. And even the outside was still not very attractive building, but be able to make a restaurant was a little bit of pig old fine dining. I don't like to use fine dining, but like an upscale service. And same thing with more expensive food, and also give the same thing than what the bistro was, with a little bit more of a casual and make everybody feel way more comfortable. And you could come on a Monday night and have a casual dinner, and coming back and dress up on the Saturday night and celebrate a birthday and eat completely differently. Eat completely differently if you wish to, and spend completely different type of money because of what you eat. So Table was definitely a love affair. And a little sad what's happened, you know, what happened with the space, but it's always the same thing. I feel what? Like challenges always are coming to me and I just have to take them.
What happen with that space? Because that, it's not developed now.
That space is like, you know, I mean, I think, you know, some people have some idea of a development and they really, I think we can almost blame that on what just happened these past 2 years, you know, between the pandemic and what that area kind of suffered a little bit. And of course, I'm a little sad to see, no, the place is not, nothing is happening in the place. I was told, you know, that building would be completely, after we vacant the place, the building would be turned down and it would be something new. And I think, you know, the pandemic did something. I don't really know exactly what's going on.
It's just nothing. Really, it's just there's nothingness. Really, I walk by it and I'm like, it could still be Table.
Yeah, I'm not really happy to see the building standing, because if I would have known that, I would have stayed there for a few more years, you know. And I don't know. Like I say, I don't know. I just think it was during the pandemic. I think it was some development, and maybe the development is coming sooner than I know. And I know this area has been changing a lot, and definitely it was a, you know, house of cards with what the city went through, with what the restaurant business went through. I mean, you know, the business next to me were not doing very well, and you know, the building was not in a good shape. So I did understand, you know, the developer wanted to take it over and make it something more attractive, but it looked like things didn't go the right way.
But John Robert, could Table come back? I mean, you talk very romantically about it. You said it was a love affair. You said you could have stayed there longer. Could Table come back somewhere else?
Definitely. I have a warehouse full of stuff, so any better. I'm always, right now I'm not taking a break. is always in my mind, always, because I was opening a new restaurant is always on my mind, and opening kind of a table style, you know, where table style, it's like, you know, and I think it's nothing, you know, something where, you know, larger space, food with detail, service with detail, but where it's very comfortable. And I'm looking without, you know, rushing it because of the situation today between, you know, what the restaurant are going through. And I think we are a little bit, you know, we still have to wait a little bit to see what's going to, you know, as everything is going to take place. And I'm busy with French Cross, busy with, you know, Barabeuf. I mean, the Barabeuf has been open for over 6 years. And I kind of switched a little bit the concept. You know, the team from Table came and joined me. And then we kind of recreate a little bit of a table base at Barabeuf, you know, which doesn't fit the name anymore, because Barabeuf was more like a burger concept.
Right.
But today it's more like a mini table. And I'm there from Wednesday to Saturday. I mean,
I was just going to ask, how often do you go in?
Excuse me?
Just going to ask how often you go in. Wednesday to Saturday?
I'm there every day we are open. You know, I'm there every day we are open. And so during the pandemic, we were closing Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And we are actually, you know, making plans to reopen on Tuesday. So it would be Tuesday to Saturday. But, you know, and it's I'm there with an amazing team. And you know, I mean, it's always go back to the same thing. I enjoy being part of it. So it's what I do.
Opening a new restaurant is always on my mind. Do you have a site in mind, and whether that's to bring Table back or to even start a new restaurant? Are you close to feeling like you're going to get ready to venture into a new one?
With full honesty, not at this present. I mean, not at this present time. I'm taking a break. I mean, it would be the same question 8 months ago. I would have told you, yes, I'm looking at a few spaces, but no, I kind of taking a break a little bit and see a little bit how everything is going to go and take shape. You know, and I think right now the restaurant business is not as much. It's not as easy then. I mean, it's never easy, but yeah. We have different challenge today than our challenge. And I never saw during the few decades. I mean, I've been in the business for a long time. So until these challenges are not resolved, I think I'm taking a bit of a rest, you know, and completely happy with the two location and the business is fantastic. I mean, and I think the business in the restaurant, I think I do go up on the Sunday, Monday night, or even though it's Tuesday night. And, you know, the restaurant, I mean, talking to a few colleagues, the restaurant are doing well. I mean, we have challenges with, as you probably know, and staff issues and we have to be careful with price also and the cost of products and it's hard because when you do certain type of food, you know, it's not something you can just quickly switch, or you can just put an extra amount because it's, you know, then it's becoming a challenge to your customer, and it's not that easy. So
I mean, I'll run the food in and out for you if I'm there. I'll just help out.
Thank you.
How's your health? I know, you know, you were battling cancer, diagnosed in 2018. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I mean, it's one of these things I don't really want to talk about, but at the same time, I'm dealing with that. I mean, I will never be cured. So I'm still dealing with chemo and just have to be strong and do the best I can to be distracted by what I do, by distracted by, you know, by we include wedding event, my daughter she's graduated from high school, and keep very positive. I mean, I think it's I know way more than I want to know about cancer, and it's one of these things where I have to be you have to be very strong, and you have to. I'm going to see something like my medical team's telling me, keep doing what you're doing because it's working.
I mean, I have to say, I really do see you all over. You don't, you look, you would never guess. You would never guess.
I just told you, like, when my medical team, keep doing what you're doing because it's working. And I'm like, okay, good. You know,
Well, everybody wants.
Everything is good, and you know, like I always say, never give up, never give up. So
you know, a lot has been said about, you know, I feel like you are the expert here about, you know, the James Beard Awards really not coming to Cincinnati, and we have all of these amazing chefs here. We really are this foodie city, and we get written about as a foodie city now, and you're part of that, and you led, you know, a lot of what was happening. Do you feel like that we are being overlooked, you know, for the big awards because of, you know, oh, the coast, the restaurants on the coast, oh, the coast.
It's a subject when I can get, I think Cincinnati has been overlooked for very long time. I mean, it's not even today. I mean, even, you know, it's, you know, I mean, I know it's part of the history of Cincinnati dining, you know, when Cincinnati had 3 5-star restaurants in the city. And I think, you know, with Maisonette, with Maisonette being the longest 5-star restaurant. And I know they got some press. They got some press in, you know, national press. But I think the way America is, you know, it's a complicated conversation. I mean, I don't know how to, but it's definitely true. We are overlooked. I think it's an overlook, and it's not, and maybe people in Pittsburgh feel the same way. Maybe people in, you know, in other city where I think the food scene also is changing, and it's changing in a positive way. Maybe they feel the same way. I mean, if you come to the, you know, I think today everything is so quick because of the social media, because of the internet, you know, so everything, we all want to know what's new. And of course, it's different too, because, you know, Cincinnati is actually, you know, having a restaurant in Cincinnati, it's actually could be more challenging than be in a larger city because, you know, you have to take care of your local customer. You have to take care of your local customer, and your local customer today, they are eating with you, and tomorrow they will eat with one of your colleagues, and they will go to another concept restaurant, and that's what they do. That's what everybody do. And then after that, you have the travelers, and I think we don't have as many travelers, and I think that's what Cincinnati is going in the right direction. It's like, no, we get the 3-state people coming, and they visit our town and fall in love with what Cincinnati offers. And I think that's make a huge difference for the national press. I think be able to be the talk around an area regionally, and then people start saying, oh, you know, I hear good things about Cincinnati, and I think Cincinnati should have deserved way more than what Cincinnati received, even for the past few decades. I mean, I really feel that. I feel like the food, the good food was always the difference between, I think, today and maybe 20 years, over 25 years ago. The good food was always the nicer food. Do you know, even when you travel, you know, you people want to, they used to direct you to the most expensive restaurant because you will have a different experience. And then with more expensive products. And today, I think it's more about the feel of a restaurant. Today, it's more about, you know, the street, you know, some of the restaurants are just the street food, but they are in a very nice setting, very, very nice setting with beautiful bar, beautiful, beautiful setting. And where you can really enjoy, you know, you can really enjoy your evening, and then you can mix that. And the next day you can have something. I mean, you can go into one of the places over the Rhine and then the next day you can go to Boca and have a completely two different experience, and completely feel like you're not in Cincinnati, you know. And if I will come and visit Cincinnati and have this experience like that in many restaurants than Cincinnati offer, I will go back to where I'm from and be like, that was an amazing city. That was an amazing trip. That was an amazing, we really enjoyed the food. I mean, you know, I travel. I mean, I'm not traveling as much as I want to these past few years, but you travel and sometimes I can be very disappointing. You know, I can be very disappointing. I mean, a few years ago, I did a fine dining trip in New York. And, you know, as a professional chef, I could be critical and I could have said, you know what? You know, everything was wonderful. Everything was what I was expecting to be. You know, nothing was like, oh wow, you know, that was even better than I was thinking. You know, and then you come back here and you realize people care. People fought to do the right thing. And I think sometimes we so go back to your question. Yes, we do not. I don't think we get enough credit. And this. I feel like it's been like that since I came to Cincinnati, and Cincinnati do not get enough credit. And hopefully, you know, some of the, you know, between our Bengals and maybe the soccer team, and you know, something else is going to attract the people, and people realize. I mean, when you come to Cincinnati, you enjoy Cincinnati. So
I agree. So where do you go on your days off? Do you go out to eat?
I try to go a little bit, you know, I was to go a little bit everywhere, you know. I mean, I mean, right now, I cook a lot at home too with my daughter. I try to spend some time with her, because if I don't, you know, if I go somewhere with my wife, then, she may not come and join us. She's too busy with her social life. but you know, I go to too many places. I mean, I don't eat as much as I used to out, but I go everywhere. I mean, you know, so it's, I mean, I'm a very good friend with them. You know, I'm a very good relationship with all of the chefs in town. I have a lot of respect for what everybody's doing, because in the end, we all doing the same, you know, we all have the same goal. I mean, it's like, I always like to say that when you open a restaurant, it's like when you get married, you know, it's a commitment. It's you think it's going to be forever, and you want that to work. You want that to be there. You want that to be, of course, you know, we have to deal with the honeymoon. We have to deal with, you know, we have to deal with all of, you know, the new things. And then after that, you have to establish your restaurant, and then you want to be there for a long time. I was one of the, you know, last night I was at Dan Rice restaurant. We had a wonderful meal. I've not been there for a long time. I went to Pepe and Dolores last weekend. Some friend of mine coming out of town, and it's the same thing. I mean, after doing the event for Susie Dion's, we did the event for the Ukrainian event, and then we went there, and it's the same thing. And I, you know, knowing people recognize me, so I have a wonderful experience, and I think everybody's doing the best to give you a very good experience. Yeah. So I was at I was with David and Christian not long ago, and you know I keep, you know, and we are very busy now. It's kind of interesting too, because some of this younger generation that I know for a while now, they are in their late 30s, early 40s, and they are family obligations. So you know, so it's kind of like what it is. So I'm a little older. So
is your daughter following in your footsteps?
No. I mean, she's helping me. She's helping us at French Quest. She's going to stay in town, and she's going to go to DAP. So that's what. So she wants to go to the design world. So, but you never know.
It's a different kind of creativity.
Design restaurant, or later on, you never know.
Well, this has been really fantastic, Jean Robert. You know, I know you're a loyal Inquirer reader. You sent me some nice notes, I got to thank you back for all the wonderful things you've done for Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati is a better place because of you. what you've done for the culture here, our restaurant scene, but also that beyond food, beyond it's part of our culture, John Robert. And thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
All right. Well, now we have to go to Bar LaBeouf, Jay.
Okay, last time I was there was with you.
I hope to see you.
Hope to see you there.
Again, thank you so much to bring me as one of your guests, and then enjoy your show. It's always fun. It's always fun to discover things and learning more about people and what they want to do and what they're planning to do and their opinion. I was listening to Pete Rose, and it was quite interesting to listen to this point of view. And you know, and it's another person who's, you know, is someone who loves Cincinnati. They love Cincinnati. He wants Cincinnati to be, you know, to be the best. He wants the Reds to be the best.
Us too. Us too. Thank you, Chef.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to John Robert for joining us. Really enjoyed our chat with him. And yeah, brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry, the moment you are going to share is the moment I was going to ask you to share. And what is it?
I went to a concert. It seems so 2019 of me. Garth Brooks was downtown. I mean, I think it would be hard to miss the news of that happening this weekend. He ended up doing two shows. Friday was the second scheduled show. Not as crowded. Saturday night sold out. Rain did not dampen anybody's mood. It was the kind of show that you expect from Garth Brooks. He just kept going, played all the favorites. The crowd was super into it. The stadium, I really, you know, being inside, it was at Paul Brown Stadium, like being inside the stadium is like, this is what Bengals games are going to be like this year. Mm-hmm. It was roaring.
Garth rolled out in the Anthony Munoz number 78 jersey.
He did. Anthony cool. Munoz was in the crowd taking pictures That's with cool. everyone. Social media was kind of filled with it. And, you know, I will say something too about Garth Brooks. You always have heard that he loves Cincinnati. But he gave you such a sense of place. He gave so many shout outs to Cincinnati, talked about past things in Cincinnati. He knew he was in Cincinnati. Like, I went to see Kesha a while ago over at Ovation, and like, she did not seem to know where she was, or even give a nod to the fact that it was the first concert at Ovation. Like, it was a concert.
Yeah.
But Garth Brooks was doing a concert in Cincinnati, and the fans responded to that.
What a huge, huge concert weekend in the Who the next night at
Who the next night,
TQL yeah. Stadium, which I heard that there were the first concert at TQL.
Went amazing. I had a lot of friends awesome. Who went.
Yeah.
a lot of friends who went. And they did everything right there too with the remembrances and what they did. You know, the video yeah. boards inside TQL Stadium are really state of the art because it's so new.
Yeah.
And everything, and they just did the remembrance right, and the Who themselves all day kind of, you know, really talked about that. And so there was a sense of place with that, too. It wasn't like we're coming back and it's a concert tour. It was we're going to remember what happened in Cincinnati.
Well, great stuff. I just had one little kind of a shout-out type of thing. I met with a Cincinnati native West Sider, Scott Schweitzer, last week. He's a political consultant strategist in Columbus. And we met and he gave me a few samples on the side of his successful, career as a political consultant. He has started a brewery in suburban Columbus, Lewis Center called Olentangy River Brewing Company. So Cincinnatians are doing big things in beer elsewhere as well. But he told me to share that with Silent Phil, so I forgot to bring it. But I'll bring you a few of the samples. Gave me a sample six pack. The For Heffin's Sake is excellent at Olentangy River Brewing Company because I'm a big Hefeweizen guy. So yeah, good stuff.
Phil just talked. Did Phil just talk?
Phil talked.
He did.
Well,
now we know what it takes to get him to talk.
Beer.
I think a specific one. We talk about beer all the time on this podcast.
Big home brewer, Silent Phil. So Scott even mentioned to you, he wanted me to share a couple samples with you. So we'll do. Sherry, good stuff this week. More to come next week. Catch you next week.